You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CB Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media White House app.
That will keep the government from defaulting on its bills. Sources tell ABC News the deal includes raising the debt limit for 2 years, keeping non-defense spending roughly flat, and phasing in new work requirements for welfare recipients. President Biden calls the deal a step forward and a compromise. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy holding a news conference in the next hour to discuss the deal. A Memorial Day weekend travel numbers. On Friday, the TSA screened 2.7 million passengers, the most in a single day since before the pandemic in 2019.
The roads are really good coming through. We didn't expect a bottleneck this far back in the airport.
I'm still surprised by the line right now. I thought I'd like 2 hours, I'd be okay, but I'll make it.
That's a couple of travelers at Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. Now the return travel. A second runoff election today for Turkey's president, incumbent Recep Erdogan, favored to win. This is ABC News. Just a couple of hours left before the green flag drops at the Indy 500.
Here in Gasoline Alley at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, final engine preps are being made ahead of the 107th running of the Indy 500. Marcus Ericsson's crew running the car through the test now. He is the defending Indianapolis 500 champion. Alex Palou will lead the field to the green flag, the first Spaniard to hold the pole position at Indianapolis. He will lead the fastest Indy 500 field in history to the green. The field averaged just over 232 miles per hour. At the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Will Clark, ABC News.
Tragically, another horse has died at Kentucky's Churchill Downs racetrack. The horse named Kimberly Dream had to be euthanized due to a leg injury. The second horse to be put down at the track this weekend and the 12th since March. I'm Derek Dennis, ABC News.
US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Clean energy products like electric vehicles or home heat pump systems are too expensive for a lot of people who'd like to own them. But thanks to federal incentives and other support, they're within reach for more people in Wisconsin. More from Mike Moen.
Last year's Federal Inflation Reduction Act includes a mix of tax credits and rebates for products designed to make homes more energy efficient and save drivers some green if they want to buy an EV. Francisco Sayu of the group Renew Wisconsin says there's long been an exclusive tone tied to the renewable energy market, but he says the new incentives are a game changer.
If you're a renter, there are rebates and tax credits for equipment that you can take with you when you move.
Sayu acknowledges implementation of the IRA is complex, meaning the rebates aren't available yet. Separately, the Department of Housing and Urban Development recently announced funding from the Act for owners of multifamily units serving low-income residents to seek grants and loans to improve the energy efficiency of their properties. As for electric vehicles, Sayu says there are now more options on the used market as some of the earlier models begin to age, and the federal incentives can be used for previously owned EVs.
If you purchase an electric vehicle that is priced below $25,000 and it's at least 2 years old, you qualify for 30% tax credit up to $4,000. And that makes electric vehicles pretty competitive.
Most states are awaiting guidance on how to phase in some of the rebates. Sayu says Wisconsin is in a good position because it already has a built-in statewide entity that carries out these types of programs. Focus on Energy will directly offer IRA programs across Wisconsin once funding is made available. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
And you're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Krebscast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. It is Saturday, May 27th, 2023, here in these United States of America, the state of Wisconsin, coming to you this morning once again from the studios of WAUK Radio in beautiful downtown Waukesha, broadcasting throughout our great state of Wisconsin through the auspices of Civic Media and the wonderful stations throughout this wonderful state. I'm joined this morning in our studio by my ever faithful, very, very productive and very professional producer, Anya, together today for this hour and next hour as well. We're going to be taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789, and as always on this Memorial Day weekend when we remember the huge, tremendous, ultimate sacrifices made by veterans throughout our nation's war. We're going to talk about that at the very end of our program today, the end of the second hour, our final segment here on Morning Cannolis. Beginning this morning, as we often do, with a remembrance of things past, some special recollections about things that happened in our nation's history and overseas as well. We'll get to that in just a moment or so ago from now. This is, as always, our weekly review, our analysis, and our discussion of the very most important news events and stories in areas like law, in government, and yes, the aspiration for justice in America. And today, following our remembrance not only of our those who have served our nation and sacrificed their lives, also today talking about the issues related to our United States Supreme Court. I'm going to chat about John Roberts and a speech he gave this past week that provides some focus and some renewed questioning about the integrity and the going forward, the mission of our United States Supreme Court. And then we're going to chat about a major, major case decided by the Supreme Court in this, the first of a number of weeks in which the Supreme Court is going to be issuing some major decisions coming out of this past term, the 2022-2023 term, this one having to do with the environment, impacting not only us today in America, around the world, but also generations. We're going to talk about that. It's a case called Sackett. Then we're going to go back for a few days and remember a decision issued by the Supreme Court in connection with Title 42 and asylum issues and the interplay between that and the COVID-19 restrictions with respect to asylum seekers coming to this country, focusing in particular upon some comments, some written comments made by Justice Neil Gorsuch at the time. We'll chat about that as well. Many other matters on our syllabus this morning. Always, always ambitious but achievable. I'm going to talk about something that happened in South Carolina just in the past couple of days having to do with abortion once again in the wake of the reversal of Roe versus Wade last June by the United States Supreme Court. I'm going to talk about something that happened in Texas or happening today in Texas, as a matter of fact, involving their attorney general And last week we chatted with some of our listeners about the importance of public integrity and public service and the meaningful assignment that that gives to anyone appointed, elected in any position of public responsibility. We're going to talk about Ken Paxton. Something's going to happen in Texas right after we leave the air today, probably about 1 o'clock today in Texas. Stay with us for that. We visit E. Jean Carroll and her statements recently about her interest in renewing yet again her focus on the former president and some additional defamatory comments that he made about her, even in the wake of her decisive victory in a federal civil trial court a couple of weeks ago. And then finally, in our second hour, spending a lot of time talking once again about January 6th, the integrity of our nation, and some very significant things that happened this past week, some sentencings, not only of an individual who used picture you may recall well, sitting in legs, arms up in Nancy Pelosi's desk in her office at the time of January 6th. And I'm going to talk about the sentences imposed upon a number of defendants previously convicted for seditious conspiracy and other crimes related to January 6th. Those defendants include Stuart Rhodes and Kelly Meggs, other people named Kenneth Harrelson and Jessica Watkins. And she in particular has a very interesting story commented on at length by Judge Mehta, who is the federal district court judge who imposed a sentence this week upon her, sending her to prison for her involvement in January. So we're going to talk about the meaning of those sentences. They are the most significant sentences imposed to date by federal district court judges in the wake of the January 6th insurrection. All of that coming up this hour and next hour here on Morning Cannolis. Thank you so very much for joining me today for this important discussion. As always, throughout these stories, we ask three important questions. We ask, what happened? What do we know about what happened? What are the facts? What are the things that we know to be the truth? Second, why are they important? Why should we care about these things? Why are they relevant? Why are they material to our national livelihood, our lives here in our nation? And what are we supposed to do about them? What kinds of activities, actions should we take in response and answer to those things? If there are things we can do, and most often, more often than not, there are things that can be done by all Americans, both in support of things that happen, but also in opposition. And that, of course, is a wonderful thing as we celebrate Memorial Day, the time of sacrifices given by our soldiers throughout our nation's history, certainly since the time of the Civil War. The sacrifices made so that we have the opportunity to exercise our free speech rights and many other rights established not only by our Constitution, but by our laws and statutes and decisions of the United States Supreme Court for about 240 years in our nation. We're going to talk about Memorial Day at the end, as I said, of our second major hour here and chat about the history there. And the reason why all of these stories go to this all-important issue of protecting democracy, again, our soldiers who have fallen, protecting democracy on the battlefields, not only of this nation, civil war, but also wars overseas, continuing that battle today to ensure that our republic is strong and safe and secure. All of that is what this broadcast is all about. This is our 49th broadcast since beginning almost a year ago at this time. And yes, indeed, along with Anya and others here at Civic Media, I'm going to be observing our 50th show next Saturday. Next Saturday, that's June 3rd, with some very special segments. Join us for that. I'll tantalize you with that. I'll tease you with that right now. It's going to be the observance of our 50th broadcast, 1 year on the air here at the studios of Civic Media. Looking forward to being with you again that time on that day. But today, once again, let's talk about some significant things, a couple of significant things that happened in the history of the world and of our nation on this day, May 27th in history. I'm just going to talk about two of them this morning. And in particular, I'm going to go back to talk about a fellow named Alexander Solzhenitsyn. I suspect that many, if not all of you, recall well Alexander Solzhenitsyn. I'm going to give you some history about him. And I will note at the top here that Solzhenitsyn is back in the news just this past week, even though he passed away at the age of 89 way back in August of 2008. He's back in the news this week and on this broadcast because one of the defendants in the insurrection sentencings imposed this past week by a federal district court judge in Washington, D.C., one of the defendants made reference to Solzhenitsyn, described himself Stuart Rhodes described himself as a modern-day Alexander Solzhenitsyn, an incredible, stunning, shocking, embarrassing, and quite inappropriate reference to this great man in our nation's history and in world history. Alexander Solzhenitsyn was sentenced, you may recall, to 8 years of hard labor for criticizing Stalin in a letter to a friend. Again, an indication of the difference between, at that time, of course, the Soviet Union and our nation. His prison experiences in the wake of that criticism of Stalin formed the basis, most people think, for his writing, a thing called One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich. It was his famous first novel and still out there, read worldwide to this day. Again, Alexander Solzhenitsyn. In 1970, he was awarded the Nobel Prize, in literature for doing what? For his work on the Gulag Archipelago, which was this vast, expansive history of the Soviet totalitarian system from the time of Lenin's ascension there to official Soviet denunciation of Stalin and beyond. The publication of that work led to his expulsion from the Soviet Union in about 1974, again, exercising not only his literary rights, but his rights to freedom of expression, which I would offer every human being has on the face of this planet, here in this nation and beyond. Foreign publication of that led to his expulsion in 1974, and he came here, and that's where his history and our history intersect. Came to the United States of America. Soviet officials later dropped those charges, and about a year later, that happened in 1990, the Soviet Union, as you well know, collapsed. 1994, Solzhenitsyn returned home, and there he continued writing and often was publicly criticized for not only things that he had written about in the past, but also publicly lauded for the wonderful things he'd written about. And when did that happen? That happened on May 27th. May 27th of 1994 was when this Nobel laureate, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, returned to his home after spending many, many years here in the United States of America. As I indicated before, he died in Moscow on August 3rd of 2008. He was 89 years old. And that happening again, his return to his homeland after having been exiled, after being charged by the Soviet Union for his writings, criticizing his own government, and then ultimately receiving some of the ultimate, most important accolades, not only literary, but also international acknowledgement of who he was, what he did. Again, back in the news this past week, we'll talk about that in connection with one of the sentences imposed just a couple of days ago upon one of the principal defendants in the January 6th matter, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, again, in our memory and in our history and our news again this past week. Also on this day, May 27th, 1935, a major date in American history related to our United States Supreme Court. We're going to be spending much of our time this hour talking about the United States Supreme Court. You may remember from your history books that the National Industrial Recovery Act of 1933 was this major U.S. labor and consumer law that was passed in the 73rd Congress. It authorized at that time the president to regulate industry for fair wages and prices, an attempt to stimulate the economy under the presidency of FDR. When we come back, I'm going to tell you more about that act, the NIRA, and its involvement throughout our nation, ultimately ending up in the United States Supreme Court with a major decision issued on this day way back in 1935. Stay with us for that ruling of the United States Supreme Court here on Morning Cannolis.
This Memorial Day, pledge to do better, pledge to remember the fallen, pledge to honor our veterans, pledge to make our country a better place to live. We, the member stations of Civic Media, join our voices in saluting those who have come before, those serving now, and those who have given everything to keep us free and truly be the land of
liberty and justice for all.
Thank you to Miss Miller's class at Howe Elementary in Wisconsin Rapids.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
We are back in this wonderful day in America, wonderful day in the United States of America, and in our state of Wisconsin, coming to you right here from Waukesha, Wisconsin. We're talking this morning about the Supreme Court, as we often do. And this past week, a few major things happened coming out of that high court in Washington, D.C. Let me begin with this reporting of a speech given by the Chief Justice John Roberts, appeared this past week before a group called the American Law Institute. They're not political. They're not partisan. They're a legal group that has as its mission the promotion, the integrity of law, the promotion of the rule of law, justice, all those kinds of very good things that we talk about on a regular basis here on this broadcast. Chief Justice John Roberts accepting the invitation to speak to that group just this past week. Of course, John Roberts, the leader of the embattled today Supreme Court, said during the course of his remarks to the American Law Institute that the toughest call he has made in 18 years on the job, and that's the time he's been the Chief Justice, was to order that a fence be erected around the building just last year. That happened, of course, after the leak of the ruling that rolled back abortion rights, that in Dobbs versus Reproductive Services. Roberts appeared in the course of his presentation to the American Law Institute, fairly defensive about a number of things, according to most people who were there, talked about the reputation of the court, which, is, of course, is a significant matter these days as issues related to ethics and the imposition of a code of ethics are all about the news today. Also answered some questions about the court's very legitimacy in this time of questioning of what it's doing, and in particular, once again, this call for ethics reform. Along the way, said, stunningly, that the most difficult decision he made had to do with the erection of those fences and barriers around the Supreme Court. You may recall that those fences were put up in May of 2022, just about a year ago this month. They were part of the ramped-up security measures following that leak, the early disclosure, the inappropriate disclosure about the decision to overrule Roe versus Wade that happened a little bit earlier in February of last year. And those barricades remain to this day. And they certainly have added to the sense that the court is an institution under siege. Interesting, fascinating that our Supreme Court justice should choose that issue about whether or not to impose upon the land, the territory there, this fencing all around the building, among, if not the most difficult decision that he had to render. He also, in his brief speech, bemoaned the public criticism of the judiciary and said, you know, we do the best we can. We apply the law to the facts to the law, And he also bemoaned the protests outside the homes of justices. And again, reasonable people can agree and disagree on that. But all of that, again, focusing on the heightened focus that we all have on the Supreme Court these days. And he appeared in particular, in addition to making this very curious comment about the fencing around the Supreme Court, he appeared to take strong objection to this growing notion. It has been out there for a while, but certainly still unaddressed, that Congress should be the one to impose an ethics code upon the court. In the wake of these recent stories, most of them focusing upon Associate Justice Clarence Thomas and his engagement with a fellow named Harlan Crow, other things involving money with his wife, Ginny Thomas, her activities, connections that would suggest some improprieties, at least the appearance of impropriety from him. Also some issues related to Neil Gorsuch and a real estate deal that may or may not be significant, and even the Chief Justice's own wife. Some suggestions that her business, that is headhunting, placing people at various law firms who ultimately end up practicing before the United States Supreme Court, all of that suggesting to greater and lesser degrees, admittedly, a need for the establishment of an ethics code for the United States Supreme Court. The Supreme Court Chief Justice said this. He said, "I want to ensure that people that I am committed to making certain that we as a court adhere to the highest standards of conduct. We are continuing to look at things we can do to give practical effect to that commitment." That is a good statement. That is to be lauded. That is to be congratulated and approved and supported. It is time, Mr. Chief Justice, to do just that. And again, if you fail to do so, the Congress should indeed act. There is legislation pending both in the House of Representatives and the United States Senate to accomplish that. Slightly different codifications of how you'd go about doing that. But there is this movement across America and certainly in the legislative body, across the parking lot there on Capitol Hill, for the Congress to do what the United States Supreme Court itself has not done. As you well know from our previous discussions on this broadcast and elsewhere, all of the other federal judges in America, also subject to the same Article 3 provisions of our Constitution, district court judges, our trial judges, our appellate court judges, we'll make some reference to them today. All of those judges are, in fact, beholden to and required to follow an ethics code. The Supreme Court is not. And one of the recommendations, of course, made by many people out there looking at this is adopt that code for the Supreme Court and work on it. Massage it perhaps a little bit with respect to the particular assignments and responsibilities of the Supreme Court. But do something and do something now. This issue is not going away. It continues to be obviously the focus of a lot of attention, appropriate attention by Americans, underscored this past week when John Roberts spoke about it, encouraged all of us, including the Congress, to stay away. That perhaps they will police themselves. We will see, Mr. Chief Justice. Please work on that and get that in place so that we can have a return to a sense of integrity by our United States Supreme Court. The Chief Justice issued that call, if you will, to stay away and to have his own court address this issue a couple of days before the Supreme Court itself issued one of its major rulings of this past term. And that ruling had to do with the Environmental Protection Agency's authority to police millions of acres of wetlands in this country. It delivered another major setback to that agency's ability to combat pollution, address climate change in our nation. When we come back, I'm going to be spending a fair amount of time talking about this major case issued under the Clean Water Act called Sackett versus EPA just this past week. Stay with us for that discussion, a very important in detail discussion of this case that's affecting not only us today, but our future generations. Stay with us for that discussion.
News and talk. Up, down, and all around the Fox Valley. This is Civic Media.
ABC News. I'm Derek Dennis. No government default. There's a debt ceiling deal in principle between Republican leaders and the White House that will keep the government from defaulting on its bills. Sources tell ABC News the deal includes raising the debt limit for 2 years, keeping non-defense spending roughly flat, and phasing in new work requirements for welfare recipients. President Biden calls the deal a step forward and a compromise. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy holding a news conference in the next hour to discuss the deal. A Memorial Day weekend travel numbers. On Friday, the TSA screened 2.7 million passengers, the most in a single day since before the pandemic in 2019.
The roads are really good coming through. We didn't expect a bottleneck this far back in the airport.
I'm still surprised by the line right now. I thought I'd like 2 hours, I'd be okay, but I'll make it.
That's a couple of travelers at Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. Now the return travel. A second runoff election today for Turkey's president, incumbent Recep Erdogan, favored to win. This is ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999. And again, 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats. And there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown.
Monday mornings at 8 on WISS. At WGBW and on the Civic Media app.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
Yeah, I wanna go outside, I wanna be.
We're here!
Whoa, that was fast!
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
You were supposed to get a colon cancer screening, but stuff came up.
We did have to pick up the twins from practice.
But on the way, we hit a giant pothole.
If you are 45 and older, don't let stuff get in the way of your screening. Visit the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at ccalliance.org.
But then...
Next segment here in Morning Cannolis, we're talking in this first hour all about the Supreme Court, a bit of history of the Supreme Court, which I'm going to get back to at the end of one of these segments, and then also about the currency, the current decisions being made by our United States Supreme Court, particularly this major decision issued just this past week by our Supreme Court in a case called Sackett versus Environmental Protection Agency. It concerned an Idaho couple. Their names are Michael and Chantel Sackett, S-A-C-K-E-T-T. The Sacketts bought and attempted to build on a piece of property in what an appeals court called a soggy residential lot near a thing called Priest Lake in the state of Idaho. And after the couple started preparing that property for some construction way back in 2007, they added some sand and gravel fill to that piece of property. The agency, the Environmental Protection Agency, ordered them to stop and return that property to its original state and threatened them with substantial fines again under the Clean Water Act. The couple instead sued the agency And that brought upon a dispute about whether that lawsuit was premature. And the Supreme Court, in an earlier appeal back in 2012, said that the lawsuit could, in fact, go ahead. Indeed, it did. And at the time, believe it or not, Justice Alito said that the law gave the agency too much power and said that the reach of the Clean Water Act is notoriously unclear. Well, this past week, the case came back to the Supreme Court, and Justice Alito once again had an opportunity to tell us what the Clean Water Act does and does not say in a ruling that is nominally, at least in terms of counting the numbers, every single justice of the Supreme Court, all nine of them, found that the Clean Water Act should not apply to the specific situation presented by the Sackett property there along near Priest Lake in Idaho. They found that it should not apply, but got there on very different grounds. And there are five justices, and for that reason, this is the majority opinion. This is the one that changes the way that we think about the Clean Water Act. A major majority decision here by Sam Alito said the Clean Water Act does not allow the agency to regulate discharges into wetlands near bodies of water unless they have, as he said, a continuous surface connection to those waters. And significantly, again, we talk about history. This is the second time in as many terms that the Supreme Court has taken up some environmental legislation and the validity of it. Last year, you may recall that they invalidated a major portion of the Clean Water Act, the capacity of the executive branch and the EPA to address environmental issues under the Clean Air Act, last term, the Clean Water Act this term. And again, as I said, this decision just a couple of days ago, nominally unanimous, with all the justices agreeing that these homeowners, the Sacketts, who bought the property, began to construct on it, should not have been subject to the agency's oversight because the wetlands on their property were not subject to the regulation in any event. And everybody agreed to that. But there was some sharp disagreement, very strong disagreement, about the new test that the majority established to determine which wetlands are covered by the law and which ones aren't. And this may sound very, very academic and very, very kind of in the weeds, no pun intended, but the reality is that this is huge because it impacts the future of our wetlands, the future of our waters generally. Along the way, Brett Kavanaugh, who joined the liberals in rejecting the new test adopted by the majority announced by Sam Alito, said this. He said, by narrowing the act's coverage of wetlands to only adjoining wetlands, and again, remember that's an important word here, only adjoining wetlands, which is what the Supreme Court said, limiting the scope of the Clean Water Act, he said, the court's new test will leave some long-regulated adjacent wetlands no longer covered under the Clean Water Act, with significant repercussions for water quality and flood control throughout the United States of America. Again, that's Brett Kavanaugh joining the so-called liberals on the bench, among them Justice Elena Kagan, who referred to the court's decision back in June to curtail the EPA's ability to limit PowerPoint emissions, again, under the Clean Air Act, criticized the present majority for its approach to this particular environmental law. She said this, the majority's decision bars the EPA from addressing climate change in a most effective way. Here, that method prevents the EPA from keeping our country's waters clean by regulating adjacent wetlands. The vice in both instances, the prior case under the Clean Air Act and now under the Clean Water Act, is the same. The court's appointment, she said, of itself as the national decision maker on environmental policy. Again, a major case coming out of the Supreme Court having to do with the extent to which the Clean Water Act requires people to get permission before they have an impact upon our nation's waters, in particular, the navigable waters, which is the way that the legislation reads, of our nation. The justice who wrote the majority opinion, Alito, said this. He said, the reach of the Clean Water Act, again, is notoriously unclear, hearkening back to what he said a year or so ago. He said that this entire stratus here of structure here under the Clean Water Act is decidedly unclear. And there are problems here with respect to definition, with what are streams, oceans, rivers, and lakes. But what does it mean for wetlands to be adjacent to bodies of water? Well, Justice Alito wrote that the term can mean contiguous or near. And for purposes of the Clean Water Act, again, this is the majority opinion, he said wetlands that are separate from traditional navigable waters cannot be considered part of those waters even if they are located nearby. And again, four justices, including Justice Kavanaugh, took a strong disagreement to that. Kavanaugh again stating adjacent and adjoining have distinct meanings. He would have included wetlands that are separated from a covered water only by a man-made dike or a barrier, natural river berm, a beach dune, or the like. He said there is good reason why Congress covered not only adjoining wetlands, but also adjacent wetlands. Because of the movement of water between adjacent wetlands and other waters, pollutants in wetlands often end up in adjacent rivers, lakes, and other waters. And Justice Kagan gave some articulation to that notion of the difference between adjoining and adjacent. She said this, in ordinary language, it's one thing. One thing is adjacent to another, not only when it's touching, but also when it's nearby. So, for example, she wrote, one house is adjacent to another, even when a stretch of grass and a picket fence separate the two. Again, a strong disagreement about the standards to be imposed in the future going ahead. The majority once again limiting the scope of the Clean Water Act just this past week, a second blow in as many terms to the environmental laws of our nation issued by the United States Supreme Court. Again, a divided court in terms of the standard. All of them decide that the Sacketts in particular should not be subject to it. But again, many people look at this and think, gosh, you could have written an opinion that because of the specific facts and circumstances presented by their property, this soggy residential lot near Priest Lake in Idaho, you could have written something that makes it specific as to them without changing and is dramatically limiting the scope of the Clean Water Act. There's some previous discussions way back in 2006, the last time the Supreme Court looked at all this, again, causing this confusion about what the standard was and until this past week remained, a case called Rapinos versus United States. Lots of disagreement even back then. Now clarified this past week by the Supreme Court, saying once again that the authority of the EPA to police millions of acres of wetlands is significantly curtailed under the Clean Water Act. A huge case, perhaps one of the top five, maybe six cases pending before the Supreme Court just decided this past week. And second, another major thing happening just outside of this past week. You may recall well, you know well, that in recent days, in particular on May 11th, the national declaration about a huge health problem related to COVID-19, the national health emergency, the COVID-19 pandemic, declared officially, although obviously not practically, over in the United States of America. And the impact of that is that Title 42, which was imposed, used by the Trump administration to keep people on the south the border of the United States in the Mexican side of the border, those people seeking asylum in our nation, that was invoked during this period of time to prevent the spread of the virus into our nation. It expired by its own statements, by its own law, its own words back on May 11th. And along the way, there had been some litigation about whether or not the Biden administration that wanted to rescind that early, to bring that to a close. That was also before the Supreme Court. Supreme Court on Thursday dismissed that attempt by these states to maintain that pandemic-era immigration measure that was known as Title 42. The court's brief in that resolving that decision was only one sentence long, instructed the appeals court to dismiss the state's motion, intervene, had to do with some procedural matters here. And it was again prompted by the end of the health emergency in our nation that had been used to justify Title 42. Now, along the way, the reason why I bring this up, again, the case gone now, not going to be the focus of a Supreme Court decision. One of the justices, and his name is Neil Gorsuch, took the opportunity to issue an 8-page decision reflecting on what he called the disruption we have experienced over the last 3 years in how our laws are made and our freedoms are observed. And again, the case gone. The case has now been dismissed. It will not be the subject of an opinion. But Neil Gorsuch decided to issue his separate opinion, if you will, his statement. And he describes in particular that various emergency measures taken during the COVID-19 crisis killed about 1.1 million people, continues to affect many people. Again, people are dying to this day in America, people suffering long-term COVID and even continuing to be affected and infected by the virus. He said that during the COVID-19 crisis, This is perhaps the greatest intrusion on civil liberties in the peacetime history of this country by virtue of all the measures taken by state and local and federal authorities to address our health care issues. He pointed in particular to closing schools, restricting church services, mandating vaccines, prohibiting evictions, all those kinds of things. His broadside was aimed at, again, local, state, and federal law enforcement authorities in Congress, in executive branch, and even at his colleagues. He said this just this past 10 days or so. He said, executive officials across the country issued emergency decrees on a breathtaking scale. And again, indicated that he himself would not have adopted, would not have endorsed those kinds of things. And we know the Supreme Court did in fact roll back some of the president's attempts to impose health-related, medically supported restrictions on movements. In particular, the one that I suspect all of you remember is the attempt by the executive branch, by President Biden, to require that corporations of more than 100 people either vaccinate or otherwise get all of their employees tested on a regular basis. That the Supreme Court rolled back very much with the support and the endorsement of justices like Neil Gorsuch. It is significant that when the Omicron variant, that is the COVID-19 variant, surged in late 2021 and early 2022, Justice Gorsuch was the lone justice to appear in the courtroom that he was unmasked, even has his seatmate, his colleague on the bench. Her name is Sonia Sotomayor. Sonia Sotomayor has diabetes, and she reportedly did not feel safe in those close quarters with people who are not wearing masks. And so she was routinely wearing a mask. And Justice Sotomayor, because of the decision, the declination by Justice Gorsuch to wear a mask while on the bench, she did not take the bench with the other justices in January of 2022. The two justices have denied that they were at odds over the issue, but nonetheless, a very visual indication of their positions on this. Again, just in the past couple of weeks, Justice Gorsuch revisiting this issue and saying that these restrictions, these conditions, these limitations, appropriately, I would offer by local, state, and federal authorities to keep us safe as we possibly can be in a time of emerging healthcare emergency and threat and challenge to our nation's health, all those things imposed upon us appropriately as exercises of legislative and most often executive authority. Justice Gorsuch calls them among the greatest intrusions on civil liberties, not understanding once again that the Supreme Court itself in years past, about 100 years or so ago, has articulated this important notion about the fact that we live in a community. And that a part of that comes with responsibility to care for each other and to impose those things upon each other that limit our freedoms in some way, but keep us a part of that larger community, safe, secure, and healthy. This past week or so, Justice Gorsuch saying that those kinds of things are great intrusions on our civil liberties. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the Supreme Court a bit and then move on to other issues of this past week important to the life and livelihood of our nation, government, law, and the administration of justice in America. Stay with us for that conversation.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens, and I'll tell you what, it's more fun than tipping cows. And actually, you shouldn't really tip the cows, okay? They don't tip as easy as they think, and they might kick you in the... Never mind.
And we are back. This our final segment of our first hour of Morning Cannolis, spending all the time in our first hour talking about the Supreme Court. And at the top of our discussion of the Supreme Court this morning, I teased you with something else that happened on this day, May 27th, this in 1935, also having to do with the United States Supreme Court and the exercise of executive authority. Once again, back in the news this past week, as the Supreme Court limits dramatically the capacity of the executive branch to address water pollution in our nation, the EPA's authority under the Clean Water Act. Well, it's way back in 1935 that the Supreme Court did something else. Not exactly in the same area, this having to do with regulations of fair wages and prices and economic recovery. As I mentioned before, the president had proposed and actually signed into law something called the National Industrial Recovery Act of 1933, NIRA, part of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal legislative programs. Had a title, first title, to promote industrial recovery, authorizing the promulgation of all sorts of codes of fair competition, if you will, guaranteeing trade union rights, permitted the regulation of working standards and certain refined petroleum products, their transportation, all kinds of things. On this day, May 27, 1935, as the Supreme Court continues to do to this day, appropriately sometimes with not without objection and without opposition, on this day, May 27th, Chief Justice Charles Evan Hughes wrote for a unanimous court in a case called Schechter, Poultry Corporation versus United States, Schechter, S-C-H-E-C-H-T-E-R. He concluded that the law that was passed by the Congress, signed by the president, was void for vagueness because the critical term fair competition was nowhere defined in the act. He said it was constitutionally overbroad. And he said, to summarize and conclude upon this point, the law is without precedent. It supplies no standards for any trade, industry, or activity. It does not undertake to prescribe rules of conduct to be applied to particular states of fact determined by appropriate administrative procedures. It says instead of prescribing rules of conduct, it authorizes the making of codes to prescribe them. And for that legislative undertaking, the law sets up no standards aside from the statement of the general terms for rehabilitation and correction and expansion as described in the law. In view of the scope of this broad declaration and the nature of the few restrictions that are imposed, the discretion of the president in approving or prescribing these codes, Justice Evans Hughes went on to say, it has virtually unfettered that power, and we think the code-making authority that is conferred by this legislation is an unconstitutional delegation of legislative power. Fascinating. That happened today, May 27th, even as we think again about the things our Supreme Court is doing, has done, continues to do as we entered into this period, these weeks coming forward of this is the frenzy time. This is the time we're going to get lots and lots of decisions, not only about the Clean Water Act, but we know in recent weeks we've seen a major decision in the area of Commerce Clause. Supreme Court saying that indeed the state of California, through a proposition there, can impose regulations and conditions upon out-of-state producers and sellers of pork that have to do with sales inside the state. The Supreme Court has recently, in an intellectual property case involving Andy Warhol and Prince, supported the notion of intellectual property and said that indeed a photographer has a copyrighted right to the integrity of her photograph, a real blow to the Andy Warhol estate, if you will, but subject of intellectual property, major decision in that area. And then also, just recently, we've talked about this as well, finding in a major case We have internet providers like Google and TikTok and others, Facebook and Twitter, all of those under the Communications Decency Act, under a terrorism act, also invoked by some families who were the subject of violence through the deaths of their loved ones, that there is no liability. There's no liability for online providers of services based upon the things that are posted by their users, in those particular cases, postings made by ISIS or ISIL that indoctrinated, that prompted people to engage in violent behavior, both in Istanbul and then also in Paris, that again resulted in the deaths of the loved ones, family members of some plaintiffs in those cases. Protecting internet liability, the bar that was set up by something called Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, a major case that continues to reverberate. Again, all these things, significant cases this week again adding to that list, this matter involving the Clean Water Act. As always, we're taking your phone calls. And Tom, you've been waiting on the line for a while here this morning. Your comments, your questions, your thoughts about our discussion today.
Hi, Mr. Centel. Well, another interesting, powerful show. I do believe that your show is one of the reasons why civic media is expanding. And I think you're really a great asset to their, you know, to their movement forward.
Thank you so much, Tom.
I wouldn't be surprised if, I wouldn't be surprised if you're picked up by some national chain or something too someday.
We will stay right here in Wisconsin and talk with good people like you, right? Right. Very good. Thank you so much for that.
Well, I was listening to the radio yesterday and I was trying different stations and I heard again on a right-wing Christian station that there's been 60 million abortions so far in this country since 73. And I don't know how true that number is. And I was wondering if that really is true. Were the laws really that lax to allow that many people to be killed? And I was wondering what your take on that is.
Sure. Again, I do not have specific reference to that. I'm gonna take a little bit of time to research that, because right after the start of our next segment, we're going to talk about abortion again. So, Tom, your call, your inquiry is not only timely, because we're going to chat about one of the additional things that comes out of the overturning of Roe versus Wade. Undeniably, abortions in America around the world happen, medically administered. We've talked in the past on this broadcast about the current issue having to do with this mifepristone, the drug that is used most often in this nation, perhaps along with another drug, to administer to assure that abortions are conducted medically safely. And the decision by the Supreme Court to send this back to the Fifth Circuit. Fifth Circuit, as you may recall, just last week, the week before, had an oral argument indicating that probably they will support a lower court decision finding that mifepristone was improperly administered and improperly approved by the FDA. We'll see what happens with that. That's heading back to the Supreme Court. But Tom, your question about the numbers, we'll check on that and talk about that. The issue about abortion generally, regardless of the numbers, the very important issue for everybody to be focused on, because it ultimately goes, as I think your question, your thought indicates, to issues of civil liberties and civil rights. We recognize that under our Constitution for a long period of time, since about 1965, there's been this acknowledgement of the right of privacy rights generally, among them, the right to reproductive services in America. So the numbers are significant as we have this continuing discussion. And Tom, again, I appreciate not only your comments, your very thoughtful and complimentary comments about our show. We appreciate it because we appreciate callers like you as well. When we come back after this next hour, we're going to talk about, Tom, that very issue and talk about what's happening in particular in South Carolina in connection with abortion. Thank you so much for raising that important issue. Stay with us for our second hour here on Morning Cannolis.
We don't need to fight. Stand face to face. And you present your case. Yes, I know. You keep telling me that you love it. And I really do want to believe. But did you think?
Did you know Bratfest, the annual Memorial Day weekend event in Madison, is 40 years old? Its history is pretty rich, too, when the grocery store-owning Metcalf family set up a brat tent in the store parking lot to sell brats to customers. By 2004, more than 180,000 brats were being sold in the parking lot. Okay, so now can you guess how many gallons of ketchup are needed for the brats every year? 30 gallons? 45? 74 gallons? The answer coming up. These days, the fest isn't just about the brats.
You know, we have a kid zone, we have a farm zone, we have a sports zone, just not really like anything else.
That's Michael Alexander, one of the organizers.
Roughly 150,000 of our closest and dearest friends.
And more numbers. 4 million brats over 40 years, raising $2.5 million, supporting more than 120 nonprofits. And the amount of ketchup used? 74 gallons. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media app.
ABC News. I'm Derek Dennis.